To WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Religious leaders have joined with labor leaders in denouncing the treatment of workers at factories owned by Quebecor World in the United States. The multi-denominational denouncement comes on the heels of charges that have been filed against the Canadian-based company with the National Labor Relations Board. The long list of charges against the world's second-largest commercial printer include accusations that workers have been intimidated, spied on, discriminated against, and even fired for attempting to form unions. Religious leaders from a large diversity of faiths, including Baptist, Methodist, Christian, Jewish, Episcopal, and Roman Catholic, offered their support for the workers' rights. The letter sent early last week also demands a fair process for workers to decide whether or not to form a union. The factories involved in the dispute are located throughout Tennessee and Mississippi.
An election year embarrassment for George Bush. Last week, a Republican-led Senate Appropriations Committee voted 16-13 against recent Labor Department changes to overtime protections. The amendment was added to a $146 billion spending bill by Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa. According to the AFL-CIO, 6 million workers faced the loss of their overtime pay due to regulations that took effect on August 23rd. The Republican-dominated House made a similar move in recent weeks, but maintained a rule change that expands overtime coverage to about 400,000 low-income workers.
Procter & Gamble is facing a boycott by two conservative Christian groups. The catalyst for the boycott is a memo sent to workers at the Cincinnati-based company, encouraging them to support the repeal of a city charter amendment passed in 1993 that bans the enactment or enforcement of laws that would protect gays and lesbians against discrimination. Cincinnati is the only city in the country that has such a law. The two conservative Christian groups are alleging that by opposing the statute, the company is essentially pushing to allow same-sex marriage in the state of Ohio. Procter & Gamble spokesman Douglas Shelton told the New York Times that the organizations are mixing two unrelated issues. The memo to employees said that the company is concerned that the amendment prevents Cincinnati from developing a reputation as an open and welcoming community. The memo goes on to say that it hinders the company from attracting and retaining talent to build its business. The letter does not mention the issue of same-sex marriage.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The University of Illinois Chicago released a new study outlining massive job losses of U.S. high-tech workers in recent years. Since March 2001, the U.S. has lost more than 400,000 high-tech workers, doubling their unemployment rates. Of the six major market cities studied, only Washington, D.C. didn't show a reduction in high-tech employment. Overall, the high-tech job market shrank by 18.8%. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I don't think that President Bush is a Republican. The root of the Republican conservative movement is conservation. I mean, that's what a conservative does. He conserves the clean air, the clean water, these natural resources. They belong to the public. And he is squandering those resources on his corporate buddies. I'm a Republican. I have conservative values, and I cannot see four more years of that kind of leadership.
MoveOnPack is responsible for the content of this advertisement. This is a big time for America. It's not just another election, not merely about a list of issues, even though some of those issues are huge, including the deliberate downsizing of our middle class and the deadly war of lies in Iraq. What's at stake on November 2nd is the very idea of America itself. The historic idea that we might actually build a society based on our egalitarian ideals of economic fairness, social justice, and equal opportunity for all. The moneyed elites, presently working through Bush, Cheney, Ashcroft, Rumsfeld, and company, have decided that America should no longer bother pursuing egalitarianism. They are asserting a new ethic of privilege, declaring that the role of government is to take care of the good fortunes of the few and not worry about the well-being of the many. In their view, they're the top dogs and the rest of us are just a bunch of fire hydrants. Wielding their administrative blowtorches and legislative monkey wrenches, they're jerry-rigging America's rules so that money and power flow uphill, out of our neighborhoods, into their corporate suites and offshore bank accounts. They're seizing control of every decision that affects our lives, from wages to taxation, from what's in your dinner to what's in your daily news feed, from who goes to college to who goes to war. They're turning our America, our democracy, into their America of plutocracy and autocracy. As I travel around the country, I find that most people are aware that something fundamental has gone wrong, that this is not the America they thought they were born into. I recently saw an old pickup truck with a bumper sticker that asked, "Where are we going? And what am I doing in this handbasket?" People know that we're being led down some rabbit trail off of America's true path toward egalitarianism. This is Jim Hightower saying, I believe we're in another of those when in the course of human events moments that Jefferson wrote about. It's a big time for America. Time to take our country back.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. 43 days to regime change. Tom Hartman here with you on Monday, the 20th of September, 2004. 1,113 days since 9/11, 764 days since the anthrax attack that brought us the Patriot Act. Still looking for that guy. Under desks and chair. Well, maybe they're not looking for him. I haven't seen any evidence of it. 683 days since we started looking for weapons of mass destruction. We've given up on that one. 470 days since Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame, got outed. That's over a year. And, who's the senior administration official? Nobody knows. Are we moving into a culture of fear in the United States? Is the Bush administration using fear as a major tactic in the political campaign? Is America being terrorized by our own leaders? I'll tell you, I flew this weekend. I did the show live on Friday from Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm back here in the People's Republic of Vermont, by the way. We'll be in Portland, Oregon this weekend. And you fly a lot, and I do. I've fly an awful lot and have over the years. And, and particularly since 9/11, of course, you see a lot of these TSA folks. And it really hit me We were going through an airport at one point. As we were coming back on our trip, coming through the Burlington airport, coming home, there was a TSA guy. This is a federal employee. This is a guy who has police powers, right? I mean, you know, he has the ability to arrest. He has the ability to shoot you. I mean, he's got police powers. And he's standing there as we're walking by, and he's going, "Welcome back, folks. Welcome home, folks." And he's welcoming us back to our city. And I'm like, oh, this is a guy who understands how important it is that we not be a nation living in fear. You know, I mean, there's a fundamental difference. There's a fundamental psychological difference between what happens when you are stopped by a police agency because of probable cause that you've committed a crime. For example, you get pulled over because you've been speeding. You expect to have a moderate to adversarial relationship, right? You know, the cop is going to say, "Hey, you broke the law." And has every right to be there in your face. I mean, it's just that's the way it is. But so, you know, at that point, you are suspected of a crime. And you know it, and they know it, and everybody knows it. And, you know, hey, that's life. That's the way you get treated. I mean, we're guilty until proven innocent and all that. But still, you're suspected of a crime. But when you're going through an airport, I think most Americans broadly have not had the experience of feeling like a suspect or feeling that the state has absolute police powers, overwhelming police powers, that it can use whimsically, however it wishes. And every now and then you hear these stories. I had an experience like this a while ago. I was going through airport security, and I was wearing deck shoes. You know, the rubber sole, leather tops, the kind of shoes that, you know, they're just kind of kick-around shoes. No metal in them. And they said, you know, "You want to take off your shoes?" And I said, "They won't set the machine off." And a woman gives me this kind of dirty look, you know, and says, "Okay." Or she didn't say anything. So I walked through the machine, didn't set the machine off. And she says, "You go over to the corner." I said, "I didn't set the machine off." And she gives me this look like, "You talk back to me one more time, boy, and you're in jail for the rest of your life." And said, "Go to the corner." So I went over to the corner, and this guy comes over, and he wands me twice. You know, they turned this into like this 10-minute production. And it was clear, and they were all making it rather clear, that I was being punished for not going along with the program. And, you know, I thought it was so sad that Americans would be subject to punishment. You know, it's sad that we had the 9/11 attack. I'm not saying we shouldn't have airport security. Absolutely we should. But what I am saying is that the airport security people, the vast majority of the TSA people that I've met, have an attitude of, we're protecting America. We're here to help you. We're going to make this trip safe for you. We're going, you know, it's a positive one. But just like with any police agency, you get a few people who get drunk on their own power. And I'll tell you, I know people who don't fly anymore. In fact, I talked to one this week who stopped flying because of a bad experience with a TSA person. And so that's it. And the airlines have got to understand this. So here we have this situation, you know, that this is, and you got airlines going out of business and people wondering why. This is really, in my opinion, this is part of a larger issue here. Here's the story out of Tampa, Florida. Catherine Harrington, the 52-year-old special ed teacher. She's got a bookmark. It's a leather bookmark with little lead weights at either end. 8.5-inch long leather strip with small lead weights at each end. Airport police said it resembled a weighted weapon that could be used to knock people unconscious, so the 52-year-old special education teacher was handcuffed, put into a police car, and charged with carrying a concealed weapon. She could go to jail, and she's facing a $10,000 fine. Harrington says she'll never carry her bookmark into an airport again. Gee, that's wise. The state has declined to prosecute. The TSA has not yet decided, but said it probably won't impose a fine. Now, I bring this up because, you know, this may seem like small stuff. You know, and I think that there's an increasing number of all these stories about people getting, you know, athlete's foot that won't go away as a result of walking barefoot through airports. You know, it's small stuff, but I think it's indicative of a larger issue. Maureen Dowd yesterday in the New York Times wrote about this woman, Sue Niederer, 55. She's the mother of Seth Devorin, 24, died in February in Iraq trying to disarm a bomb. Laura Bush comes to Hamilton, New Jersey to give a, you know, my husband is doing wonderful speech. Maureen Dowd points out back during World War I and World War II, if your son or daughter died during the war, you were given a gold star to put in your window. They were gold star mothers were the queens of their neighborhoods, says Maureen Dowd. Well, here's Sue Niederer, a gold star mother. She shows up at Laura Bush's rally wearing a T-shirt that says, "President Bush, you killed my son." They hustle her out of the gig, out of the event, and as she's standing outside talking to a reporter, as this was reported by Keith Olbermann on MSNBC in his evening news program, she is approached by the Secret Service and arrested. Standing there outside the event talking to reporters. Here, you can hear it. This is...
Why aren't the senators, the legislators, the congressmen, her children serving in this war?
Now, see, this is before she gets arrested. She's just talking to the reporters, and she's saying, well, her bottom line was, you know, if this war is such a just cause, why aren't the Bush twins enlisting? They're 22. They just got out of college. Let them join the Army.
If this war is a war that they agree with, there are only three who have no...
You need to come with us, ma'am.
You want to arrest me?
Well...
Yeah, and so now you hear the radio, you need to come with us, ma'am. And she says, "You arresting me?" And now it gets weird.
No,
I really don't
want to
arrest
take
me.
My, how do you put an arrest here on what? Go ahead, come on. Arrest me right here in front of everybody. Go ahead. She's a ticket. I have a ticket. No, it is not. This was open to the public.
And, you know, they say she doesn't have a ticket. She shouldn't be in here. Well, she's already outside, but she actually did have a ticket. And you know, on it goes. Here's this.
Sorry, ma'am.
No.
I asked you to leave nicely and please step away.
No, absolutely, positively not.
All hell is breaking loose here.
Excuse me, you have to.
This is one of the Miranda rights. You have to tell her what you're charging her with.
Tell me what my rights are. You have to.
And then Keith Olbermann comes in after he's played this clip and just kind of clarifies. And I'll play his little piece of it here because there's a wrap-up at the end. And also, you know, he deserves credit for reporting this on the national news. I salute him for that.
And that was outside the hall. Sue Niederer of Hopewell, New Jersey, was the mother of Army First Lieutenant Seth Devorin, 24 years old, when he was killed in February trying to disarm a bomb. She says she was charged with defiant trespass. And wearing a T-shirt reading, "President Bush, you killed my son," Ms. Niederer got in one last swipe at him.
"My ex-husband and I both sent him letters upon the killing of our son, to which we received no response. What we did receive was, 'Would you like to make a contribution to the Bush campaign?'"
Yeah, would you like to make a contribution to the Bush campaign? By the way, welcome to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. You want to drop into the chat room, go to TomHartman.com and click live chat. It'll take you to the CompuServe Democrat, the Democratic forum on CompuServe. Click the chat button. It'll drop you into the chat room. And let's take a call here. 1-866-889-8894. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Tom, you know, you make a point that I think a lot of us forget about, why it is that a lot of people quit flying. I actually went out and got a different job. I used to fly about 250,000 miles a year.
Yeah.
And it was insane. I was going through security, and this is post 9/11, and they opened up my shaving kit, and there was a pump bottle, not even an aerosol, of insect repellent.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they said that I had to have every single piece of baggage I have confiscated or I couldn't get on the plane.
Wow.
And when I asked them, I said, "Well, can't you just confiscate this one thing? I mean, it seemed to me like it's pretty reasonable." Even asking that question got me hauled over to a room and told if I talked back to any of these officers one more time that I was going to be booked.
Yeah. I have seven million miles with Delta Airlines. I have a little less than a million miles with United. I mean, you know, a bunch of my, you know, I'm a super frequent flyer.
Right.
And I have, well, partly because I've been doing a radio program for 2 years, but I've dramatically cut back. And your story, Chuck, is not, you know, I hear these things on airplanes. You know, people complaining about they're not accumulating the frequent flyer miles they were anymore to get their upgrades because they hate flying now. You know, and because of the security experience. Although I have to say, I think it is getting better. I think that there was a period in the year after 9/11 when there was just absolute hysteria on the part.
Well, it's true, Tom. But you know, the thing is to me, I mean, I look at this situation. I mean, the last time I flew was only a couple months ago, and I was looking at the people that they hire, and they're not well trained. They're just not.
Yeah, yeah. And Louise just pointed out, one time I had a little airline bottle of gin in my toiletry kit, which, you know, it had been there probably for a year and a half, you know, from some flight that I'd collected it on.
Yeah.
And going through TSA, they made me drink the thing. You know, it's like, as you know, it's like, well, maybe it's gasoline and you're going to pour it on the plane and set it on fire. So, you know, who knows? Well,
at least
I enjoyed that flight. Chuck, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, number 20 minutes past the hour. I want to get into this thing with Bush's National Guard files. There's three new twists in this. Fascinating stuff. Karl Rove up to his old tricks. We'll talk about that after this. It's the Tom Hartman program, 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah.